The Kentucky Derby is 2 weeks away as the Run for the Roses returns in the first Saturday in May. Get a free $25 Kentucky Derby bet from Naira Bets. Simply sign up with promo code REWIND25, that's REWIND25, and claim your free $25 bet. Plus, you can earn an additional $200 sign-up bonus. The fastest 2 minutes of sports is now your fastest per day. Sign up for Naira Bets today at NairaBets.com or download the Naira Bets app and get your free $25 wager. The Keeneland Spring Meet continues through April 23rd, featuring two grade stakes this weekend, including the 100,000 Baird Double Dog Dare, which is a grade 3 on Friday, and the 200,000 grade 2 Elkhorn on Saturday. Keeneland offers big pools and full fields for bettors. In fact, Friday, April 16th, Keeneland offers a guaranteed pool of 200,000 on their Pick 4 presented by TVG. On Saturday, April 17th, they'll offer a guaranteed pool of 300,000 in their guaranteed Pick 4. The Keeneland Spring Meet continues from April 2nd to the 23rd. For information, visit Keeneland.com/racing. Welcome to episode 100 of Riverboard Rewind. My name is Spencer Luganbuehl, and today my special guest is none other than Twin Spires and Churchill Downs' own Ed DeRosa to go over four fabulous races from this past Saturday at Keeneland Racetrack. Those races are 1, 7, 9, and 11. And some angles that we talked about are why horses that win multiple grade 2 and grade 3 stakes can sometimes be overlooked and are great bets at overlaid odds, why having Curlin as a sire isn't a bad thing on a wet track day, and why betting the top two choices in an exacta can still pay big dividends. This is Redboard Rewind. It's the same old story in this cycle. We go back and forth. We go back and forth. It ain't good for me what we do this for. We go back and forth. Won't do this no more. And now I'd like to welcome in my special guest for this week's podcast. It's Ed DeRosa of Twin Spires and Churchill Downs. Ed, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Looking forward to the final push to Derby.
It's always this time of year where stuff just starts getting crazy. And, you know, when you add other stuff into it, obviously I do this podcast every week. I'm also doing the write-ups for Oaklawn. Now I've got to keep going after making that first playoff win in the Daily Gallop contest. It kind of feels like I'm handicapping six tracks after a while.
Yeah, the being in a contest like that, and then you get Laurel, which, you know, I know for some that's a major track. It's home or, you know, Mid-Atlantic or familiar with it. That's definitely sort of an oasis for me. It's not typically a circuit I'm paying attention to, but definitely going to have to add it to the list this weekend.
Thankfully, I have someone like Naomi Tucker I can kind of, you know, talk strategy with and ask her some stuff since she's with the In the Money team. I was just happy I didn't have John Piasek anywhere near me with Laurel coming up.
Yeah, that's a home base for guys like him, or Torjman, obviously, would be a force there.
Going into this weekend and this Keeneland card, obviously, I guess there was obviously always going to be weather happening, but when it kind of comes down like in this type of deluge, for me, I was kind of hoping it was going to be, you know, a good track and maybe good on the turf for a while, but then obviously everything just happens. How much are you trying to, like, change your handicapping on the fly? Are you really trying to be, like, set a day or two out where, yeah, it's probably going to come down heavy enough where, you know, they may come off the turf, or I'm just going to handicap for a sloppy track, instead of trying to, like, make that 50-50 kind of idea when you're handicapping?
Yeah, I definitely, and, you know, with my picks going up on the Keeneland website, or when Churchill comes up, they go on there. You know, I'm pretty much 48 hours out, which, yeah, the forecast can be a little more reliable, 48 versus 72 or 96. But the way I handicap when you know, I'm definitely sort of a form and speed guy, and horses going in the right direction in my mind are going in the right direction, whether it's fast or sloppy or, you know, even a surface change. I still want horses who are in form. I'm not one of these handicappers that think, oh, well, they're trying turf, maybe you can improve 30% speed rating. Maybe you find the answer to that question at 20-1. But when it comes to the logical contenders, I want horses going the right way, so to speak. I'm very ragged and minded when it comes to that type of identifying contenders. So I don't worry as much about the surface. I just kind of pick you know, who I think are the likely horses, where the value might be. In my head, I am thinking Fast and Firm, just because that's, you know, sort of the mode, the default setting. But you have to be willing to be agile for sure. And I think the more variables you throw in, like weather and surface changes, that's when things really, in my mind, sort of run off into the margin. So maybe I'm willing to take a shorter price on the favorite just because they're that much more a standout in the slop against the shorter field. Or you say, well, there's some questions here, so I need to look at some of the other contenders I liked at a price. But first and foremost, I think horses who are, you know, that look ready to run a good race, that applies whether it's turf or dirt, you know, faster, muddy, sloppy, et cetera, 48 hours out for sure.
I want to say thank you as well. You're one of the few public handicappers who shows their stats at the end of a meet or at the end of a year. Have you ever, or do you have a chance where it's like, if it's a wet day compared to a dry day, that you almost separate your stats out to see how much better or worse you do when it's wet compared to a dry track?
Yeah, I probably should. And anecdotally, I will say I feel like my percentage of top pick, so to speak, so the public handicapper role, go up, which mm-hmm. I think makes sense because you're dealing with some surface changes, shorter field. Mm-hmm. So the percentage of favorites goes up under those settings. So even if I'm not picking at the level of the public, my numbers are likely to go up as well. Wagering wise, I would say I probably suffer, but that is anecdotal. And I think that is actually a good column to sort of add going forward is, you know, how many scratches were there on the field. One thing I did do, and I'll need to just finally write up this blog post, we're 4 months into the year, but one thing I did do in 2020 is I started keeping track of where I handicapped and where I actually played the races. Mm-hmm. So just trying to get a feel of, you know, if I'm working at the track, do I do better? If I'm, you know, in it, does being at home with the kids affect my percentage and my ROI? How am I when I'm playing from the office? You know, all those things definitely have a chance to affect your concentration and how you play. And I definitely found that handicapping in advance helps my ROI. So, you know, doing it for work, which is typically when I hand it, like 48 hours out, I would never do as a recreational player. I don't mm-hmm. think I, you know, live in the moment. And if I can play, I, you know, set the time aside to do it right. But I don't think I'd be that far out without for work. But as it turns out, my numbers are better when I do put in the time and, you know, have a deadline to put some picks up. But I will go back to what I said about, you know, the off tracks and things like that. You have to be agile the day of, you know, when your top pick, or in my case, like a lone A scratches, that completely changes the complexion of how I otherwise would have played the day. And I'm not saying you have to start over per se. But you have to, you know, be willing to say, well, you know, what looked playable with the single might not be anymore, because now I need to go X deep in this race. And that means I'm leaving off horses, you know, I think have a shot at 10 or 20 to one, which I never want to do. So it's all about being nimble the day of. And I found that, you know, when I'm at home, and, you know, I guess pat on the back for being attentive to the kids, but playing from home just is not good for the bankroll, in my mind. It's just the focus isn't there to properly structure or to account for changes, et cetera. And, you know, that's important for anyone to be aware of.
I think, too, and even for someone like me, when I'm there with the bet squad, I tend to, you know, if somebody wants to get involved in a pick four ticket, I'm like, okay, here's my 20, let's make it a $100 ticket. Whereas, like, if I'm running off my own ADW, I would never even think of that. I'm much more of the, you know, the win place player. I'll play a couple key exactas, maybe a double, maybe a really solid pick three if I have a really solid opinion on a horse that isn't the favorite. And I feel that just from the beginning of this year, having done so much writing for Oak Lawn, and I'll start writing for Lone Star soon, I think that really knowing your circuit and understanding certain specifics of it, like I believe I looked up Deodoro stats, and I was like, guys, 30%. There's got to be a chink in the armor somewhere. And I know what made me look up just his maiden stats in general, but he's 1-for-12 so far at the meet with just maidens.
Wow.
Which, yeah. I mean, for so many people who just look at 30% and bet willy-nilly, a la Chad Brown, Todd Pletcher, I think 1 for 12, you know, and it goes to show, you know, he does have a lot more of like that middling claimer types and not so much the allowance type and not so much the maiden claiming types. I was very surprised to see a stat like that, and everyone will say, oh, it's only 12 starters. Yeah, but it's only 12 starters at a meet where he doesn't have really 200 starters in the meet. I mean, that's a big deal to me.
No, that's and considering his win percentage otherwise, I mean, I do always caution, like, some people, oh, let's say, you know, 4 for 20, which is 20%. You know, to me, that's not much of a sample. I mean, all of a sudden you go 2 for 3 and you're 6 for 23, you're above 25%. And you go 0 for 3, you know, you're below 15%. But, you know, the numbers you say, and, you know, we know Diodoro's a huge barn and he just reloads every year. 1 for 12 is pretty telling.
And I think as well, I love the fact that you brought up the 5 for 20 and how much a stat can be misleading. For me, I like to also just see if a stat has at least 5 wins, at least I know that barn at some point knows how to win with those types. If I start seeing, you know, 2 for 7 or 2 for 6, that's almost just too short in itself, where everyone's like, oh, he's 44%, he's 4 for 10. And sure, but you're also like taking 2 to 1 on that horse or 8 to 5. If he's 4 for 10 and the horse is 16 to 1, doesn't matter. I always tell this to people who are beginners. If a horse is 10 to 1 and you find minuscule reasons to play the horse, play the horse. I think I was playing Keeneland yesterday and I had that, it was in a maiden race. It was the 9 horse that went off at like 40 to 1, had a huge, huge turf pedigree, and ended up getting bumped, and they had the horse, the number 7, taken down. I can't remember which race it was, but I played the horse at 38 to 1. He had trouble coming from the back of the pack, was making an absolutely huge run. And I know for next time, the horse, you know, now finishing 5th or 6th, might still be, you know, 20 to 1 next time out. And that'll be one I have to put in the stable mail.
Yeah, for me, I agree. I think you said it the way I usually explain it is I want to know that it's been done before. So, you know, when I see 0 for 20, you know, looking at maybe a sire stat or a particular trainer stat without a lot of other context, I perk up a little bit. And I see 1 for 20, less so, because they've done it. Now, obviously, like 0 for 6 or 0 for 7 isn't enough to draw a conclusion. But to me, those offers, when you're dealing with starting to get to, you know, weeks of racing, to me, do matter. And it's that one win. It's an exponential jump for me.
Let's try and help some people learn some new handicapping angles and try and help them with Keeneland so far for the meet. Let's start off with our first race. It was race number 1 from the Saturday card. It was a 40,000 beaten claimer for horses that have never won 3 races or were just straight 3-year-olds going 6.5 on the dirt. What did you like in here, Ed?
You asked me what races I wanted to pick, and I admittedly picked one where I had a winner at what I thought was an extremely decent price. Best of Greeley, I thought, was playable at 4 to 1, which was the morning line, and we ended up getting a little better than that. John Ortiz was a trainer who had a pretty rough fall at Keeneland and Churchill, but turned things around, kind of like a Ben Colebrook who had a rough turfway and is doing really well at Keeneland. But John, I thought, kind of finally righted the ship. I love that he got Luis Saez for this one. And just looking at the Bristnet speed ratings, Best of Greeley was consistent. The last race off the long layoff wasn't up to where he had run before, but it did look like if John had this one ready to roll second off the layoff, any of his previous races from 2020 would be good enough here. And I thought we were getting the right price to find out. So, and we got the drop in class to straight claiming versus the optional. So it wasn't one of those like, oh man, how are they going to let this horse go? He's the most likely winner. It was just, I saw a competitive race and thought that the price would be right on him.
When I first looked at this race, and obviously now we have the sloppy track to account for as well, I would say I got blinded by two horses. One of them being the number 4 Artemis City Limits with that nice 91 on the wet fast track. It was an off the turf race back in June at Churchill, and obviously hadn't replicated, especially over the last 3 races as well, although the 2 were on turf and 1 was on synthetic. I thought maybe off the layoff, getting back on dirt, we might see a number. And it also didn't have to be a 90. It could have been, in this type of race, an 80 to an 85, and he could still possibly gotten the job done. And also a horse like Get Hammered was another one, had that big 90 at this exact track. Came in the optional 100 and 2X. These were just two horses that I kind of thought would be, one might be overbet and the other one might slip through the cracks and I could get somewhat of a price. And I thought 2-1 at Artemis City Limits was an okay chance here. Obviously, Wesley Ward has been absolutely on fire, and maybe the fact that this horse didn't go off the favorite for me might be telling that this horse maybe wasn't as good as I thought on paper.
Yeah, and I think Get Hammered was one of those. I just had to make the decision to let him beat me, and you know, then he's 3-2, and I rads up, and it's Larry Ravelli. I mean, all signs that you know you're gambling against him by playing against him, or you could choose to gamble for him. But at 3-2, I was glad I had just kind of planned to lay off even before I saw that price. You know, clearly they thought he fit the class, but maybe needed one. It was a long layoff for him. And then our team at City Limits, I sort of agree with you on how it ended up shaking out price-wise. Get Hammered's 3-2 versus our team at City Limits, who is the 9-5 morning line favorite. I definitely could have seen a situation where, oh, okay, he's not the favorite. This horse is usable. On the BurstNet numbers, yeah, the wet fast race was his best by far. It was a 96 BurstNet speed rating. But other than that, all the other races were a touch slower than what Best of Greeley had been doing at Oaklawn last year, especially second off the layoff. So the price differential was just too great for me, 2.2-1 versus 6.2-1. And I really, in my mind, in terms of, you know, finally ready to plunk down and actually make a bet on Best of Greeley, the Louis Saez thing just kept calling out to me. He hasn't ridden for John at all. You know, not that John starts a ton or Louis riding at Turfway. So, I mean, it makes sense. But nevertheless, he was aboard, and I just thought that was a big signal.
We were talking trainer stats a little bit before going over the race. The number two Smart Time, Richard Castillo, this got brought up in our Slack group. I think it was Ryan McCarthy who brought it up. Trainer off long layoff, last 5 years, 5-6, 71% in the money, $9 ROI. It kind of seems like this is the kind of spots where he just knows how to, you know, put horses out there and really make them run to the best of their ability. I was still a little bit skeptical, and with a big-time trainer set like that and already me having ideas on a couple other horses, I just need a little bit better than 7-2.
Yeah, he ended up taking money, and then looking at his numbers, you know, it makes sense that some people thought he fit. The layoff was my big question, admittedly. It just seemed like, you know, with Best of Greeley second off the layoff, you know, that was a big positive because both Get Hammered and our team of City Limits hadn't run this year either. So it seemed like a horse who was in form had a shot here. City Drifter, we've talked a little bit about other horses in the race whose best numbers have come on dirt, and City Drifter's by far worst number, or one of his worst numbers early in his career was a Churchill on the dirt. And then Grove Daddy was the other one who wasn't too competitive on numbers either. So, you know, when we talk about adjusting for on turf and, surface changes, et cetera, to me, Best of Greeley was just the one sort of going in the right direction. He had his race off the layoff. This was second off, and Predict-A-Form, which is, you know, one of the numbers I use along with BurstNet, and I mentioned Ragazin and a few others, but they classified his race off the layoff as a new pace top, which is something Kerry Photius came up with when looking at a horse's early pace and then how they finish. And he, you know, through many races testing it, discovered that new pace top designation often indicated improvement second time out. Not always, of course, but again, you're adjusting for price and that type of race off the layoff, it just seemed like he was the one moving forward where a Smart Time probably needed one. I wouldn't give up on him, especially given how rank he was early. You know, maybe next time's the time at a much better price.
Four, and it's the number three Best of Greeley. For me, it was number four, Artemis City Limits. Let's see who can win this claimer right now.
We're off. Very awkward beginning there for Smart Time, who drops out to the back of the pack several lengths. Up front, Get Hammered comes out running for the early lead. Best of Greeley has speed to the inside of that one. That pair goes to the front from City Drifter. Artema City Limits up on the outside now, taking third by a neck. A break of seven more lengths then back to Grove Daddy, and a margin of nearly 10 more behind that one back to Smart Time, who's the distant trailer, as the leader is Get Hammered after an opening quarter, 22.39 seconds. Get Hammered, the leader. Artema City Limits moves up into second. Just off the leader's flank to the outside. Best of Greeley gets the shuffle back to third a length. City Drifter looks to the outside and fourth. A gap of seven more back to Grove Daddy. Still a long way back to Smart Time last. Midway on the far turn. Get Hammered. Artema City Limits 1-2, separated by less than one length to the top of the stretch. Another length and a half then back to Best of Greeley. City Drifter and Grove Daddy, they turn for home. Get Hammered, the leader. Artema City Limits is there up on the outside and starts to draw alongside the leader. Best of Greeley tries to join them third. Still two lengths away, but moving up on the outside. Artema City Limits puts a head in front. Best of Greeley takes a run at him from the outside. Here's Best of Greeley up to take the lead in deep stretch from Artema City Limits. Grove Daddy to third. It is Best of Greeley, Luis Saez, to win the opener at Keeneland. Artema City Limits was home second. Grove Daddy.
And the number three, Best of Greeley, gets it done. 1440, 80 buyer. Excellent, excellent win mutual. The first thing that I thought of when I saw who won the race and when the buyer came back was, this horse had run a 70 in 9 of its past 10 starts based on buyers. And I'm like, he'll probably run a 7 again. Ran the 80 and got the job done.
And I don't know what he got on BristNet, but looking up the numbers on Thorough Manager, he definitely took a step forward from that Oaklawn race and didn't get back to any of his tops from late 2019 to early 2020. John might have a useful one here, eligible for some starter now. We'll see where he goes, but he wasn't claimed, and it was a great effort with Saez up. So I was pleased to get 6-1. I thought that was a fantastic price.
This is, everyone always wants to talk about the stake races and where the stake horses are going next. This is kind of like my favorite type of race to talk about because now they have so many other opportunities. They have the starters. They have a bunch of different ways they can go. And sometimes you can almost, the same way you'd follow the maiden winner up the ranks allowance than the stake races, you can follow a claimer like this and still, you know, maybe get 7-2 next time, 4-1, and then you can still keep hitting these $10 mutuals. And when you kind of get an idea for a barn that has a specific horse in mind, you can really start fattening up that bankroll.
Yep, and especially with a trainer like John, who, you know, will be at Churchill, so, you know, maybe this one shows up there. But you have Indiana Grand and Belterra, you know, quasi in your backyard. And, you know, I don't know what the Belterra condition book looks like, but, you know, the source would actually be eligible for an N2X there, you know, which is some friendlier confines. It's two of his three wins we're claiming. Two of his three wins will also come on and off going, which seems to happen a lot at Indiana. So, I would expect this one to be paraded around the Midwest circuit this summer.
Grove Daddy came in third, ended up with a 70 buyer, 11-1. Kind of one that I think was overlooked a lot, but when you look at the wet mark and Tomlinson, 443 wet mark, did have the one win on the wet track out of four starts. Second longest shot on the board and still runs in there to get third, and the rest of the horses after that, Smart Time, Get Hammered, and City Drifter, were all about 10 points behind. So I think a really smart little uptick there from trainer Neil Pessin.
Yeah, and, you know, really two of the three in what was, let's see here, a 97-1 trifecta were two of the only three horses in the race who had run this year, and City Drifter looked much an outsider and was really just close to 15-1. Grove Daddy was 11-1. You know, I ended up not doing anything other than Best of Greeley. But, you know, there were definitely some options here, you know, especially if you were willing to toss, Get Hammered at 3-2, which I thought was way too short. And, you know, Grove Daddy made sense as a horse who, at least, you know, going back to kind of how I look at races, was in form and just, you know, had a shot to run his race.
Let's move on to the next race. Race number 7 from Keeneland was the Ben Ally. It is a grade 3 going 1 1/8 miles on the dirt. There was a couple horses that were early morning line favorites. Beau Luminary was just one that when you have 7 seconds and 11 starts, I think you're second itis, and I think no matter, you have to get very, very specific special circumstances. I love seeing Night Ops whenever he is in any race because I think he always takes money, and I think it's a very good bet against. When I saw Silver Dust at paying a $10 plus mutual, I like had to like make sure it was the same horse that seems to always win these grade three races every, like when you think of, you know, what a fake grade three or a fake grade one horse looks like, you're looking for horses that have won multiple times. This one to me fit this race just to a T. And when I saw $11 and I looked through, I was like, are they really making such a big deal that this horse came off the layoff and on the turf and couldn't win and didn't run amazing in the dirt mile against horses like Nick's Go and, you know, Jesus's team? I was stunned.
Yeah. And, the biscuits remain loyal and, you know, Brett uses a variety of trainers, and Gabe was at Oaklawn with By My Standards, you know, so who knows. But nevertheless, Adam, even through this six-race losing streak, has remained loyal. For me, the race went through night ops in terms of not went through, and I thought he was unbeatable, and that I thought even money, and he ended up being 9-10, was ridiculous. I thought that was a tremendous underlay, and unfortunately there were only four other alternatives, so I wasn't licking my chops as much as I normally would when you can toss a horse like that in a bigger field, where maybe your secondary of opinion of who can win can, you know, provide a nice linchpin for a pick end sequence. So unfortunately with the short field, I didn't get too overly involved, but I did land on Treasure Trove on top. Just kind of chose to believe, you know, that this one, you know, might, just be able to stick around. They went a mile and a half last time, 2 miles, three starts back. Mile and an eighth is about as long as you get to go, in Kentucky, when it comes to stakes races. And you got Tyler Gaffleone. It really wasn't so much, oh man, I love Treasure Trove, as it was, well, I definitely don't like Night Ops, and Treasure Trove's going to be the longest shot in the board. I want to take a shot in this race. And, you know, you look at the running line, and he was just fifth all the way around. So that's kind of disappointing. There were a couple instances in the race where it looked like he might, you know, swing out and strike and make a move, and unfortunately never did, but I'm just never going to mind the try, and he ended up being the fourth choice, not the fifth choice. But I thought Night Offs, I agree with you, just looked a total underlay.
I think too, in this race specifically, and this is for just beginning players in general, for someone like me who maybe, you know, had been getting his butt kicked in the earlier part of the card, now I kind of come up on what was my best bet of the day, and I didn't really have enough, like, as much bankroll as I wanted there. I was obviously going to make a big win bet, maybe try and put him in some picks. I ended up just betting the win bet. How important is it that when you have a horse like this, and you just have to realize, like, what a lot of people I think try and do is they maybe start with 200 for the day, and like they're like, okay, if I can get up to 300, I can bet an extra 10, 20 bucks in the win end there. When really they should be looking to play less and just really make sure they have that prime bet money left for that horse that they really think can be the best bet on the card.
Yeah, but this is one of the tougher parts of racing that doesn't, I think, get talked about enough. And, you know, part of my job when doing the race-to-race handicapping for Churchill maybe is to be to blame, because we want people engaged every race, and, you know, engaged means wagering. But you need a plan of attack if you're going to take this seriously for any day at the races. And, you know, we're all guilty of it. Well, if I hit this pick five, I'll have, you know, more money to play later. I'm going nuts on Thurby because, you know, try to build a bankroll for Oaks, et cetera, et cetera. Same story, different event. And really any one day at the races has, you know, those same pitfalls. But you have to make sure that you're taking care of your best opinions first. And that means squirreling money away, so be it. But, you know, if you have a very strict budget, may be less fun to kind of sit on your hands for the first few races, but if you plan to win, you want to make sure you're allocating the most money to your strongest opinion.
For Ed, it was Treasure Trove. For me, it was Silver Dust. Let's see who can win this grade three right now.
They're off at the Ben Ally. There goes Sprawl.
Sproul comes out running for the lead. Bo Luminare is there toward the inside. Night Ops comes away in third. Silver Dust was off a step slowly, but moves up now on the outside. Three lanes off the rail. Fourth to third to second within a length of the lead around the first turn. And Treasure Trove drops to the back in the fifth position. Sproul is the leader. Sproul against the rail leads at 3/4 of a length. Silver Dust goes second by a length and a half. Bo Luminare third against the rail by a neck. Night Ops is fourth on the outside of that one. Break of 3.5 more lengths back to Treasure Trove, who's last. 23.79 seconds. The time for the opening quarter. Up the backstretch they go in the Ben Ally. It is Sproul who shows the way. Sproul leads it by almost a full length. Silver Dust is second by a length to Bo Luminare. Third a neck. Night Ops fourth up on the outside. And two more back to Treasure Trove, who brings up the back, but right there with the rest as they move for the far turn. The first half mile went in 47.63 seconds. So Sproul and Silver Dust now. Silver Dust right alongside of Sproul. That's the battle for the lead. Night Ops is third on the outside by just ahead. Bo Luminare is in fourth. And Treasure Trove is fifth, looking to the far outside. 3.5 lengths off the front pair. Around the far turn, Silver Dust has the lead by a neck. Sproul is in second. Bo Luminare looking for running room in third. Night Ops is fourth with 1/4 mile to go. And Treasure Trove is a wide fifth as they turn for home. Silver Dust with a narrow lead. Bo Luminare outside, Sproul to the inside, and then Night Ops and Treasure Trove far outside. These five line up across the track in the final furlong. Sproul is running a game race down to the rail. Bo Luminare is there. Silver Dust is there. Silver Dust ahead in front once again. Bo Luminare, Night Ops is running late on the outside. Silver Dust in front at the line. Silver Dust.
And then number five, Silver Dust gets it done, paying 11.20 with a 92 buyer. I will say this from watching this replay. It literally looked like the ending of a turf race. I could not believe that every horse was in here with a shot. I was just blown out of my mind.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, my pick never passed a horse, but it, even for him, it 6-1, I kind of thought he was in the right spot, and he just didn't have it. But yeah, for a 5-horse race, it was you definitely, whoever you backed, you thought you had a shot at some point, even with Sproul on the front end. So it ended up being Silver Dust and 9-2. I mean, like you said, a proven competitor at this level, mixed in with a horse who just always seems to take money. You got a great price.
I think as well, looking at the third place horse, Bo Luminare, just another in the money finish. And I think that's what it kind of comes down to, is those types are always going to end up hitting the board, but they are always going to end up getting beaten by, a horse that takes a lot of money like Night Ops, who probably is good enough to beat that field except for just having Silver Dust in it. And I think that this was much more of a, strange weather condition. Everyone will say, oh, we won because it was a sloppy race. And I think that this is a race where, for people who are trying to learn more about class, he kind of just gutted it out based on class.
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. And DeBell Luminare, I mean, this was his stakes debut, and ran okay, even third. I was surprised to see him that short, to be honest. I definitely thought Silver Dust should have been a little shorter. I mean, this is a horse who was 1-2 to win at Turfway after shipping up from Gulfstream, and his other win was last year at Gulfstream. Gate to Worry sort of ran off the screen, having it all his own way. So a lot of mixed signals with him. I kind of thought he was an underlay as well. So it was a good race to take advantage of two overbet horses. Too bad I didn't.
Let's move on to race number 9. Is the Grade 3 Stone Street Lexington going 1/116 miles on the dirt. We had a horse in here that was a morning line favorite that, for me, following a lot of the Fairgrounds cards and having Brian Natto on, I just didn't want Proxy at a short price. I'm very high on Mandaloon from those races, even though he had just put in a stinker in the last race. And when I finally got down to it, I didn't really have a pick per se in this race, and I just didn't want to throw bad money after I had such a good hit a couple of races ago. So not that it was a pass race for me, but I just didn't really have a good opinion.
Yeah, I share your lack of interest in Proxy. I didn't love him in the Risen Star. Definitely didn't like him in Louisiana Derby at an even shorter price after that runner-up finish. And he took a step back there. and I didn't like him here. And as it turned out, he was the 6-5 morning line favorite, and he ended up being almost 5-2 second choice. I thought I was being super clever with Swickshire. And this is another example of, you know, needing to adapt because, you know, where it looked like, oh, we can beat, you know, the 6-5 favorite in a Derby prep that everyone's watching and it's a decent sized field. Now, all of a sudden, we're on the 2.2-1, so 11-5 favorite, you know, in his stakes debut, third career start. It was in the layoff, like, all of a sudden, you know, at 5-1, beating at 6-5, I'm happy to find out if this horse can run back to those mid-90, upper-90 Bristnet speed ratings. And then where the answer is, yeah, he can at 5-1. At 11-5, I'm scratching my head and saying, well, wait a minute, this horse hasn't run in nearly 3 months, and what's going on here? And, you know, he ended up being overbet in my mind. Unbridled Honor was who I picked second, and he's sitting up there at 20-1. He's trained by Todd Pletcher, who ran 1-2 in the Wood, won the Florida Derby, finished second in the Jeff Ruby Stakes with Sainthood, and that was sort of clicking now in my head. Instead of 10-1, we get 20. My favorite jockey's up, who rode him last time in the Tampa Bay Derby, and, you know, just picked up a lot of horses and shows up here. So that's who ended up playing. Just you get 20-1 instead of 2-1 on a horse I didn't think was that much worse than Swiftsure. So that's kind of how I distilled it in the final minutes when I actually saw the board.
I think for me as well, and I would pay for people to do this. If you follow a certain circuit or just our weekend warrior looking at specific cards over the weekend and specific horses, a long shot wins or a decent price horse that you didn't have, go back and look through the, you know, first or second choice in that race, and I guarantee you can find a lot of holes after the races are run, which for me, obviously, a lot of people will say, oh, why would you do that? The race is done with. But I think if you can at least look at a past performance and see, like, oh, you know, it was that first time in a stakes race, and, you know, I just kind of, you know, I was, you know, drawn in by the tote board, 6-5. I guess everyone else is right. Who cares about the not running in stakes races? And I feel that once you start kind of, you know, rinse and repeat, you can start seeing those same type of PPs pop up elsewhere, and it really helps your handicapping to being like, I saw horses like this lose last week. It's the same kind of, you know, spot. Is it any different? And now these horses are even lower prices. You know, maybe I need to start looking somewhere else in the race.
Yep. No, I'm with you completely on sort of red boarding, which is the point of this podcast, and encourage anyone to do it on their own too. And, you know, one of my favorite handicapping books is The Odds Must Be Crazy, which is the Ragas and Tome. And one of my favorite passages in there is about a horse, you know, that the boys in the office, Len Ragazin and Len Friedman, couldn't figure out how this guy landed on the horse, and, you know, that uses the sheets, they missed him. And the guy said, well, at 3-1, I hated the horse, and at 30-1, I loved him. And, you know, to me, that's really stuck with me. And, you know, there's just such this pressure on picking winners and having so-and-so on top and hitting tickets. But, you know, really, it all needs to come down to price. And I thought the Lexington was a perfect illustration of that. You know, I didn't like Proxy at all. I mean, even drifting up to almost 5-2, had zero interest. I would have needed 5-1 at least. I mean, it just didn't like the horse. Looked like he was going the wrong way after that Louisiana Derby. But if you were kind of a fan and thought, man, how does he not win this race? Look what he's done so far. 6-5, kind of light. And now all of a sudden he's the 5-2 second choice, close to it. Then, you know, I could see where people would have landed on Proxy. Swiftsure, you know, maybe the barn loved the horse, and we know that, you know, word gets out, and, you know, who knows. But 2.2-1 still blows me away. And that's an example, too, going back to what I talked about of, you know, where I am when I play and paying attention. You know, if I had been in a spot where I'm getting my picks in because I'm doing this or that, I'll be outside, I'll be mowing the lawn, whatever. I would have been embarrassed to have played that horse at that price. But, you know, I was able to maneuver and, you know, still didn't work out totally to my liking, just playing Unbridled Honor to win. But I feel much better about that bet than I ever would have about Swiftsure.
For me, like I said, it was kind of a past race. The horse that I had a minute idea in was the number 10, Starring in My Dreams. Louis Sy is aboard for trainer Dallas Stewart. Had the sloppy win in the second career start at Churchill and didn't run half bad in the Louisiana Derby against Hot Rod Charlie and some of those. I thought maybe in a little bit of a weaker field, we might end up seeing another improvement here. For Ed, it was Unbridled Honor. Like I just said, for me, it was Starring in My Dreams. Let's see if we can get Grade 3 Lexington right now.
Here comes Bezos out running for the lead. Noble Reflection is there to the inside, and Swiftsure up close in between that pair. Noble Reflection, the leader, as they head down to the first turn. Bezos going to back away to the outside. Swiftsure moves up into that second spot just off the leader's flank. Bezos goes wide at third. Starring in My Dreams is away fourth, angles down toward the rail to try to save some ground around the first turn. Hockey Dad is in fifth. It's My House is sixth. Proxy goes seventh. King Fury is eighth. Unbridled Honor, last of the nine, after an opening quarter in 22.39 seconds. Noble Reflection, the leader. Noble Reflection on top, three quarters of a length. Swiftsure second by three quarters of a length. Bezos third up on the far outside. Gap of two. Starring in My Dreams, midpoint of the back stretch, is fourth. A break of five. Hockey Dad, It's My House. King Fury to their inside. Proxy going to have to go to the center of the track and will likely be caught wide onto the far turn. Still running nearly 10 lengths off the lead. Unbridled Honor is at the back. 45.87 seconds. The time for that opening half mile. Noble Reflection, the leader, three quarters of a length. Swiftsure takes aim again at the leader. Bezos has lost some ground. Starring in My Dreams moves up around the outside third. King Fury moves by to the inside in fourth. They're at the quarter pole. Proxy wide around the turn is still eight from the front. Top of the stretch, Noble Reflection with King Fury moving off the rail, and Starring in My Dreams swinging up to the outside. Unbridled Honor goes to fourth. Still six from the lead. King Fury goes to the front with Starring in My Dreams in second. Unbridled Honor third up on the outside. Final furlong of the Stone Street Lexington. King Fury against the rail, three-length lead. Unbridled Honor second, Starring in My Dreams third. Proxy.
And a horse we hadn't talked about, the number nine, King Fury, gets it done, paying $38.40, 95 buyer. Super solid run, like you had talked about, Ed, by Unbridled Honor, run second. I ran third, had a little bit of improvement, but when you have bad favorites, it's just, and you go back and look and, hey, why are these horses running, you know, why are these big mutuals happening? You got to look a little bit deeper to find horses like this.
No, and by no means do I think even after the fact King Fury was impossible. I mean, numbers-wise, he was a little short. You know, his 93 on Brisnet in the street sense was okay. You know, Swiftsure would run faster. But, you know, there was reason to think that if Kenny had this one ready to fire, you know, Brian stayed aboard, which is typical for Kenny. But, you know, there were some things to like. I mean, the horses run nothing but a mile and a 16th. So, you know, he comes back off a layoff and a stakes. And he actually, I don't know what the buyer was, but Brisnet-wise ran a little bit better than his street sense. Given the way this Derby's played out, I wouldn't completely dismiss him if they decide to go for it and he ends up getting in.
It was a 95 buyer. He improved 15 points over that street sense. I think just looking at this, and I've been talking about this a lot with some guys on Twitter, I want a lot more of the late developing three-year-old, I think, in this Derby. And I think this horse having that first start as a three-year-old, and they also paid $950,000 for the horse. I know people say that sometimes they can make a mistake and overpay for a horse, but at almost $1 million, this horse is meant for something better than 5,000 clamors at Belterra Park.
No, that's well said. And this is a powerhouse pedigree. And Terrace was, I believe, a grade one winner at 7 furlongs. And then you get Curlin on top. So there's a lot of brilliance here. And also some stamina as well, given Curlin. But, you know, whether the Derby's in the cards or not, this is a horse I expect to be hearing from throughout the summer.
Let's move on to the last race of the pod. Race number 11, Amazing Special 8, 7 furlongs on the dirt. We have a half to justify in here, the number 9, Stage Raider. What were your thoughts on this one, Ed?
Yeah, I thought it was a two-horse race. You know, I thought Stage Raider definitely made some sense with 7-2 on debut from an outside post position, engaged early and then disengaged behind a next out winner that we've come to know is prevalent to disappointed in the Wood Memorial, but certainly showed, in the allowance win is a horse who, has some stakes ambitions. And then number 11, Harvard, who was not as fast as Stage Raider on debut, but had a similar runner-up effort, and that was going 6 at Gulfstream. So I thought the 7 furlong distance here was interesting. Harvard had run a little more recently than Stage Raider and definitely figured to be a longer price. So I ended up going with Harvard on top, but I really did think this had the look of, it was probably going to be one of those two. And sort of the litmus test for me in terms of value and who to use was the fact that Windcracker was 6-1 on the morning line. And, this is just a lifetime maiden who I understand why they keep trying to maiden special weight races. And, he probably has a win on his card at Indiana Grand for a lower purse without having to give him up. But this is just a horse who time and again has shown he isn't going to beat well-meant straight maidens. And in the case of Stage Raider and Harvard both, it looked like they were better than Windcracker, who was 6-1 on the line. So I kind of thought I had the race covered with the pass line and craps.
I feel like, too, just obviously we've had, the sister for American Pharoah, who debuted the day after he won the Triple Crown. She won off at 8-1. Stage Raider obviously being the half to justify. That first race I thought was excellent. Obviously, Prevalence being a next out winner, we kind of understand what he was up against. I still don't like the fact that it was a slow pace and he still ended up losing by so much. So I thought that let me, try and find the secondary horse, which I also thought was Harvard. And the debut for this type of horse, Gaffleone, staying aboard, was 6-1, ended up second. Brissette does very well, second time out. I thought, let me play Harvard at 7-2. And then I couldn't believe for a dollar you were going to get $12 back for an exacta by playing Stage Raider on top. So I said, I'll bet Harvard to win. I'll play the backup exacta, and I think I'm covered right there.
There you go. Yeah, no, sounds like we saw pretty similarly. Cronus, I picked third, and in my mind was a horse who could improve. Jason Barkley, who's a trainer, a young trainer I have a lot of respect for and think he gets the most out of the stock he ends up with. This is one of the probably the highest price he's ever had in his barn from the start. He's probably claimed a few that cost more in the ring before he was involved. But he's not he hasn't been so far in his career a big debut trainer. And indeed, second career race, he's 13% with a positive ROI. He's just 3% in maiden special weight races, though. So he's still finding his bearings with the right horses for these type of races. But I thought improvement was possible. He's 15-1 on the morning line. Maybe one of those shockers if both the top picks didn't fire. But for sure, I sort of, agree with you. As I noted, it just seemed like it had to be one of the two out of those Gulfstream maiden races.
For Ed, it was Stage Raider. For me, it was Harvard. Let's see who can break their maiden right now.
They are at the post and they are off. Harvard broke alertly, but there goes Stage Raider. Stage Raider now takes hold of the racetrack. It has a challenge from Windcracker there to the inside. Those two at the front as they head up the back stretch. Road Bible goes a close third. Harvard a close up fourth. Here's Six Pack looking for running room to make that a five-way battle for the top spot. Six Pack moving by to put a head in front. Further back, Hope and Dignity is sixth against the rail. Cronus goes seventh. Private Network is eighth. Sensible Jim, ninth upon the outside of the far turn. And then Complicate, tenth back toward the inside. A long way back to Derby House, who's last of the 11, 22.7 seconds. The time for the opening quarter. Windcracker against the rail, leads it by a neck. Six Pack is alongside. Here's Six Pack now fighting back on the outside to put ahead in front around the far turn. A gap of 2.5 to Stage Raider, whose third. Road Bible is in fourth. A gap of 5 more lengths. Hope and Dignity, fifth against the rail. Harvard is in sixth. Sensible Gem, then Private Network, top of the stretch. Six Pack, a narrow lead. And here comes Stage Raider swinging out to the center of the track. Windcracker is fighting on, cuts the corner as they turn for home. Wind Cracker Stage Raider six-pack in between that pair. Final furlong, Stage Raider striding away now. Stage Raider opening up with every stride in the final furlong. Stage Raider, the half-brother to Justify. Stage Raider, much the best here for Irad Ortiz Jr. Harvard is going to move up through a crowd to grab second on the line.
And the number seven, Stage Raider, gets it done, 580 with a 95 buyer. I just feel like when he got to the top of the stretch and watched everyone kind of, you know, sluggishly coming home, and then all of a sudden you see this horse just powering down the lane, it kind of made me kind of feel like it was just, you know, a men amongst the boys.
Yeah, no, that was it was a coming out party, and I'm not sure if you saw on Twitter, I believe it was Craig from Timeform US said, where did that performance come from? And Chad Brown actually responded to him, which, you know, I didn't really understand Craig's being that incredulous. I mean, given the pedigree and who he ran up against, you know, first time out, it made sense, but, you know, glad he spoke up, and it's great to see trainers on there. But yeah, that was a coming out party for sure, for the homebred, the Gunther homebred, and obviously given that pedigree, there's going to be a lot of interest if this one's able to get a graded stakes win.
I heard quiet whispers of, you know, Hidden Scroll 2.0 here with the big run in the slop, which I'm sure, you know, as you chuckle, I kind of feel like that ends up happening. I was talking with Marshall Sterling before I came on for the pod, and I said, what would the wager have to be? I don't think he's going to win a grade one or grade two the rest of the year. What would you take? And he goes, I think he'll win a grade two.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we talked about, you know, I've mentioned Indiana Grand a couple times already, and I did mention it with King Fury, but was sort of thinking that there's so many options out here, you know, for your you know, McPeak and Ortiz, mm-hmm. and Cox that can run in the Indiana Derby and Ohio Derby and all those types of races. And, you know, when you think about New York, you know, you get all these heavy hitters from the Brown Barn and Pletcher, et cetera. And you don't really think of those options out there. You know, the Jim Dandy is, you know, it's a grade two, but it gets, you know, some real grade one type horses. Whereas maybe the Midwestern Derbies don't. I would probably want to say graded stakes, not limited to one or two with him.
It was nice to hit this exact, a nice way to end the day. I have one last question for you before we let you go. The In the Money Derby contest is going to happen today, where it's me, Naomi, Matt, JK, and Pete. I have the third pick in this draft for horses that I think are going to run first, second, or third in any of the Triple Crown preps. Who would you take at number three?
Number three, okay. Well, Essential Quality is going to go one, so he's out. Two, I'm going to say Rock Your World will be the second pick. So at three, see, part of the strategy is, okay, who do I think would also run in multiple? So, yeah. You know, some guys put, you know, that, like, if Highly Motivated sort of, you know, I think he has a big, I'm a believer, but I could see, oh, he's, you know, he runs a practical joke type race, and he's not going to go to the Preakness off that. I would probably take Hot Rod Charlie. We know Doug likes to dance, and that ownership group seems keen to run, and, you know, is a believer in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, which he was runner-up to Essential Quality in. I would probably look in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth. Hot Rod Charlie's probably going to be my pick. Hopefully he is still available. If not, if he goes two, it's going to kind of jumble me up. I'll probably end up just taking Rock Your World at three then.
But yeah, I think you have to if he's there. So, I mean, you have two really good choices that you're guaranteed because, I mean, I can't imagine Essential Quality not going one.
I will say this, though, in a type of snake draft where there's five people, so you pick first and then you pick 10th, I kind of feel like if you pick one, you almost have to find the Derby winner with how sporadic it's been this year. I mean, you almost have to, you have nine picks between you and your second pick. It's going to be very dangerous if your number one horse, you know, maybe just doesn't run that well in the Derby.
Right. Yeah, that's true. How many rounds are there?
It's four horse teams, so four rounds.
Okay. So you go 3-8.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
Hmm. All right. Well, yeah, eighth. I mean, then you're probably getting in the weeds then. But
I'm thinking Mandaloon, but that's just because I've had kind of the boyhood.
You're a
crush
fan,
on
right? Yeah, you could be there. Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. That is the end of the podcast. I want to thank Ed DeRosa for spending some time with me. Great to have you back on the podcast airwaves. Where can people find you on social media?
EJXD2 on Twitter, Racetrack Foodie on Instagram, and search my name on Facebook. But Twitter is where we have the most fun.
Can't agree with you more. Thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you.